Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. Even though the world of nanotechnology operates at the tiniest scale, it has spawned conceptual issues of mega proportions. A recent workshop on nanoscience brought researchers from across Canada, the United States, and Europe to Edmonton. And terms like revolution, paradigm shift, and natural characterization peppered the scientific discussions. Among the nanoscientists who talked from a philosophical perspective were Dr. Martin Moskowitz, an expatriate Canadian who is now the Dean of Science at the University of California, and Dr. Robert Wilco of Canada's Stacey Institute, and Dr. Staff Borgs from Leuven University in Belgium. All this coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. One of the first undertakings of the new National Institute for Nanotechnology in Edmonton was an international workshop to look at one of the big issues facing the new field of nanotechnology. And that is a question of integration. How do we marry what science and industry has already perfected on the micro scale with all the pioneering work that's happening on the nanoscale? Dr. Martin Moskowitz is one of the early researchers in nanoscience. While at the University of Toronto, he made some important discoveries that have helped in the development of nanowires, diodes, conductors, and sensors. Today, Martin is the Dean of Science and a Professor of Chemistry at the University of California in Santa Barbara.
Well, we've been working in nanotechnology for many years. In fact, well before it was called nanotechnology, we were working in areas having to do with tiny particles, tiny systems, assemblies of tiny particles that showed very interesting and unusual properties, chemical properties, physical properties, light-absorbing, light-emitting properties, things that we thought might be useful and certainly interesting. Indeed, it's turned out to be that way, to some extent, being at the right place at the right time. Nanotechnology, or actually nanoscience and technology, is really a series of paradigms. It's sort of a conceptual revolution that has, to some extent, as its greatest strength, the fact that it brings together a very broad range of individuals from biology through to chemistry, physics, engineering, even media arts, into a kind of collaborative mix, so that there's a change in thinking, a change in perspective that is already paying off. I know that people are waiting for products and processes that are based on this, and indeed I think they're happening already. But even now, nanotechnology in paying off, in realigning the thinking of individuals in some of the major industries potentially benefiting from nanotechnology and the way they strategize their future and they look at opportunities in the years to come.
Can you give me some examples of what that change in perspective might be?
Well, you know, the traditional microelectronic industry is already a nanotechnology. Lateral dimensions in CMOS is currently around 130 or so nanometers. It will go to 100 nanometers and perhaps below fairly soon. And so the notion of miniaturization is something that has been around for a while and really informs those systems. Some of the progress in nanofluidics and in nanoelectromechanical systems are already finding applications in therapeutics and in diagnostics. Magnetic recording and magnetic reading already makes use of the so-called giant magnetoresistive effect, which is an outgrowth of this sort of nanotechnological thinking. So, in fact, you're already seeing influences in the cell phones that you carry, the computers that you use, in the telecommunication strategies, the streaming television streaming, and due to the nanotech revolution.
always thought I was pretty hip when I was a kid because I actually had a transistor radio. And at that time, we considered transistorization or the miniaturization of stuff was actually something that came out of Japan. But if you look at how far we've come today and the fact that Canada wants to be made known as a player in the nanotechnology field, where do we actually stand in terms of the bigger picture of what's going on in nanoscience around the world?
Well, Canada is a player, and it has been a player for a long time. Early on, it was an unrecognized player, especially in Canada. I remember being a member of a network of centers called CMADE, which really had nanotechnology at its core. And at that time in 1993, a long 9 years ago, it wasn't quite seen how this will pay off. But the flip side to that story is that we had strength and continue to have strength in Canada in nanotechnology right across the country. And I think NINT and a couple of other initiatives, sister initiatives, and programs like the Canada Foundation for Innovation has really contributed to the development of these strengths in a major way, significant way. I think Canada will be a player in this revolution, this technological revolution.
How do we stack up in terms of where the Americans are at right now?
Well, the U.S. is spending an awful lot on nanotechnology. In fact, not just the Americans, internationally, a great deal is spent on nanotechnology. The U.S. has the nanotech initiative that President Clinton announced at $500 million. That's probably only approximately a quarter of the overall investment that's going on in Japan. There are equivalent programs in Europe also. This is a good thing because it provides a context. It shows that this isn't a flash in a pan, a local, locally grown industry, but something that the world at large has embarked on, has embraced, and we're participants, we're major participants in it. What we have in Canada to bring to bear is an awful lot of pioneering talent. The work of Jed Harrison, for example, at the University of Alberta is a marvelous case in point. I think he is really a leader worldwide in nanofluidics. The work of Sajeev John at the University of Toronto, a founder in photonic crystals, and some of the work of the members of the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research program in nanoelectronics are leaders in their field. Their work is equivalent to or better than their peers around the world. So I think Canada's investment is significant. Science always asks for more. However, in this particular case, I think all of the players, the government, the university, and NRC has stepped up to the plate, and we should expect significant benefits and payoff from this. I figure you should ask that question 4 or 5 years from now, and certainly not of me, but whoever is running the program should be able to give you a litany of accomplishments that Canada should be proud of.
This is a conference about integration. Why integration? What's the issue here?
Well, all revolutions sometimes have to wait for their full impact to be realized. I remember Chuen Lai was once asked if the French Revolution was a good thing or a bad thing, and he reflected for a moment and said, "It's too early to tell." It's the same with nanotech. I think that its full impact, its full payoff will come many years in the future. However, I think we can see early payoff by asking questions such as how can nanotech enrich, modify, add to, embellish, and affect existing technologies like the silicon industry. It's a huge behemoth that is not going to go away very soon. In fact, we don't want it to go away. It's the foundation of a lot of our technological strength. And that's what integration is all about, and that is taking new technologies that are being created through these strategies that nanoscience and technology is bringing, nanoassembly, various growths, various lithographies, and asking how can we help them enrich the technology that is already at hand. And that's what integration is, marriage between existing strong technologies and these very powerful new ideas that are coming on stream all the time.
From the presentations today, what does that represent? What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that the richness that I believed existed in nanotech is alive and well at NINT and in Canada. If you notice, the presentations range from therapeutic agents, biological assays, nanoelectronic sensors, communications and computation, a broad range of interests. Certainly something that would have been unheard of a decade ago in the same room. And yet one quarter of the audience didn't go to sleep while someone spoke, and another quarter while another one spoke. Everyone was really on top of things, alert and interested in this broad interdisciplinary. I think it was a wonderful conference, quite emblematic of the sweep of nanotech, and again another indication that nanotech is alive and well and indeed vibrant in Canada.
Thank you very much.
Great pleasure.
That was Dr. Martin Moskowitz, formerly of the University of Toronto. He's now the Dean of Science at the University of California in Santa Barbara. When Dr. Robert Wilco took the podium at the recent workshop on integrating nanotechnology, he decided it was time to invoke Mother Nature. In a sense, he was reminding the techno junkies in the crowd that nanoscience is more than the wizardry of building nano wires and self-assembled molecular structures. Rather, a touch of humility and reverence for the natural world was in order. He even talked about something he called natural characterization. Robert Wilco is a principal research officer with the Stacey Institute for Molecular Sciences at the National Research Council in Ottawa.
Well, there's been a narrowing in thinking. People are thinking molecules could be really tiny wires, and boy, wouldn't that be neat. But I'm saying, sure, that might be really neat, but you know, we already have excellent wires made out of copper, and it's not clear that making tiny, tiny wires out of molecules, which are very poor conductors, is a worthwhile thing to do. It might be. I'm not saying it's bad, but there's so much attention given to that one aspect when there's innumerable other exciting possibilities. You know, molecules, what they do, what nature has made them do, is interact discriminatingly with other molecules. Only molecules can, you know, recognize and tell the difference between other molecules. You could never make a silicon structure or a copper structure or whatever. You could never make it discriminatingly interact with a molecule. And that is so important. If we want to make new diagnostics for advances in medicine, we have to think about communicating with molecules or identifying molecules ultimately. And so it's not a good idea to think that, oh, we'll do this out of silicon somehow. Silicon's a fantastic foundation or platform for so many things, but not that. So we think that maybe we can make hybrid devices that somehow incorporate the qualities that molecules have and the qualities that silicon technology has. So maybe a molecule grabs hold of or recognizes another molecule floating by and somehow induces an electrical signal in the silicon structure below, and so you get a little impulse or signal you can measure and say, aha, I've detected one.
Does that suggest that there's something more natural involved in putting all of this stuff together?
Yeah, I'm aiming to measure or communicate with molecules in a way that molecules normally interact with other pieces of matter. It's unnatural in a way to think we could make a big electrode out of copper or something that connects to a molecule in some controlled or useful or understood way. We just can't do it. It doesn't make sense.
I've heard the term self-assembly a number of times today. What is self-assembly?
Well, it means different things to different people, but in general, it is a tendency for molecules to come together and form some kind of ordered structure. The idea is that many weak interactions between molecules might add up to make a collection of molecules, a big structure, which has some great integrity. A cell wall that makes up the cells in all of our bodies. Those molecules that form the wall, that really tough little rubbery wall, they're just held together by very weak, what we call physical interactions. And by that, I mean not chemical bonds. It's a kind of hugging of molecules. Molecules all hug other molecules, and they like each other. And if you put enough of those kind of weak hugging interactions together, you get a pretty powerful force or bonding interaction. And so anyway, that rubbery membrane which surrounds all cells is just held together like that, and it's a self-assembly process. They just kind of snuggle up and form structures.
The message you've had today is that you have to look beyond self-assembly, and that some of your research has been involved in that area. What are you doing there?
Well, we've tried to coin this term self-directed growth, and we're suggesting by that self-assembly, but more. We're suggesting, again, this tendency to come together automatically, forming a superstructure or a larger structure out of tiny entities. But we're also suggesting a process where the location of that structure is predefined. So we don't want something to just form spontaneously anywhere. We want it to form where we want it so that it becomes a useful part of some structure or device.
Do you see different ways of these nanoscale things to be built?
Yeah, so by going to this, what we hope is that the next level, self-directed growth rather than self-assembly, we think we now have that added ingredient that will make it a practical thing. So we could, for instance, seed or initiate growth of little structures in a whole array of points, such as might make up some sensor or electronic device, and then we would be able to make a whole bunch of those little things identically and simultaneously. So we bring a large degree of efficiency and practicality to what has so far just been a really esoteric, fiddly business tinkering with individual molecules.
What's the real message that you're trying to get across to people today?
Well, my favorite part of all this is the incredible richness and even beauty in it all. There's unlimited flexibility in nature to achieve different functions, and we're just experiencing a tiny part of it, or harnessing a tiny part of it so far. And we know just enough to know that there's an awful lot more out there. So it's just an exciting area to be working in.
Thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure.
That was Dr. Robert Wolko, a principal research officer with the Stacey Institute for Molecular Sciences at the National Research Council in Ottawa. Thank you. The question of how to marry the present world of microelectronics with the emerging, even tinier world of nanotechnology is one of the major issues facing researchers in these fields. At the recent workshop on integration, Dr. Staff Borg of Belgium presented what he called a top-down, bottom-up approach. Staff Borgs is a professor at Leuven University in Belgium.
The top-down approach means, in fact, that we create very small structures by removing parts of the structure and leaving behind, let's say, something new. While the bottom-up is just the opposite, in fact. We create something like a new structure starting from single atoms or single molecules and build them up to a certain extent. Now, the point is that these structures are still very small, let's say, up to something like 20 nanometer or so. And so we cannot reach them, so to speak. So we need something like another thing that is very small, like tweezers, very small tweezers, so that we can grasp them or that we can make contacts to these small structures. And this can only be done with a top-down approach. So on the one hand, we need to come from a very large world going into the very small world. And on the other hand, from the other side, we start from single molecules, single atoms, build up small structures, and at a certain point, they will meet each other. And that's, in fact, what I meant with top-down and bottom-up.
Is there a problem where they come together? Do we have to develop a whole new way of dealing with these things?
Yes, indeed. I think that where they come together, that's, let's say, the most important point of study right now. And so what we see is that, in fact, we strongly influence the whole structure. Once we come from the macro world and we go to the very small thing, we have a very strong influence on these small things. And this indeed plays a very important role. For instance, if you suppose that we look or take small pieces from biology, like a protein, and we want to put a protein on a surface, for example, we will strongly influence the protein itself. And so we have to ask ourselves, okay, is this protein still the same and when it was free? And is it still used for example, if we want to use it as a kind of a receptor, a detector molecule, for example, does it function in the same way as it when it was free? So indeed, yes, there is a strong influence. And the point where these two meet is a very complicated thing.
You've called this convergence. What should convergence do then? What should we be looking at?
Yeah, convergence means, in fact, is broader in the sense that we bring together different disciplines, like, for instance, biology, engineering sciences, physics, chemistry, and none of us is a specialist in these different disciplines. But we have to bring these things together. They have to converge in something which is completely new. And that's what, in fact, what I meant with convergence.
What are some of the obstacles now that we face?
I think when thinking of making things smaller, the behavior, first of all, of all these things becomes different. As you know, if we reach the dimensions of these very small things, like up to 20 nanometers or so, the behavior is completely different and is in some respects also quantized. So if you think, for example, of the conductance of a current of electrons, we cannot speak anymore, let's say, of a continuous type of current. Sometimes we have electrons jumping from one place to the other and then blocking the other electron. Or we can have just the fact that the electron is not, let's say, a particle anymore, but it's a wave. And that has a completely different behavior. And these are one of the obstacles we will meet. Up to now, the silicon technology has tried to avoid all these obstacles. So all the transistors we know, they still work in a classical way, described by, so to speak, by Ohm's law. But once we reach that very small dimensions, they will behave completely different. And this is indeed an obstacle.
If the classical law won't hold, what's next? What replaces it?
Oh, well, there are different possibilities, I think. I mentioned also in my presentation that we go from, let's say, the classical way a computer works to something completely new. People talking about quantum computation, computing where something like coherence is involved. Okay, this still sounds futuristic, but I think that if we go to these very small dimensions, it will become a real part of it. And so we will indeed deal with completely different ways how we compute things.
You've come from Belgium in order to speak to the scientists here. Where does Canada fit in terms of the nanotechnology world right now, the research that's going on?
Oh, I think that we understand each other quite well right now, and there is a very strong activity going on in Canada. And by the way, one of my postdoc students is from Edmonton, by accident. Yeah, we know each other, and I think that the new initiative here, which will be launched or is launched now today, is very strong resembling what we are doing in Belgium, and that's maybe also one of the reasons why I'm now here. We follow more or less the same strategy, and so yes, there is a say a strong resemblance between what we're doing and what's going on here.
What message do you have for the research here?
Oh, there are a few. I think that although in my presentation I put some emphasis on applications. I think it is dangerous only to think of applications. I think a lot of this research is what you can call Darwinian, with some things like survival of the fittest, and it's like kind of a biological approach I'm having now. But I think we still must have the possibility to start in many different types of topics in this research and see which one will survive. Right now, people have been dominated, or let's say guided by financial, by the dollar sign, in fact. I think this is completely wrong. But what I see here, and if I look, for example, at the poster sessions, and the academic research here in Canada is still, let's say, a kind of a Darwinian sort. So they try indeed different type of topics, and I think this is very positive.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That was Dr. Staff Borg, a professor at Leuven University in Belgium and a researcher at the Leuven Microelectronics Center. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during the program are available as audio files and as written transcripts from our website. The web address is innovationalberta.com. And remember to sign up for the Innovation Alberta online newsletter. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the National Institute for Nanotechnology, Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Ingenuity Fund, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the University of Lethbridge, the Alberta Research Council, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, True North Energy, Japan Canada Oil Sands, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.